It was good to be able to kind of get it out in a song.
The whole, you know, origin of where we're all coming from. I'm prepared for death because I don't believe in it. I think it's just getting out of one car and getting into another.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Talk More Talk, a solo Beatles videocast. We are a bi-weekly show that mainly focuses on the solo years, but tonight we'll be focusing on the new White Album box set and recapping the White Album Symposium. But first, let me introduce myself and my co-hosts. I am Tom Hunyadi. You may know me from my show, Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast that I host with my cousin. And let me introduce you to my co-hosts. First up, she is the author of Songs We Were Singing, the guided tours through Beatles' lesser-known tracks, and Michael Jackson's FAQ book. She also has her Deep Beatles and Deep Soul columns for Something Else Reviews. And now I want you all to bow your heads to the queen of all Beatles media, Dr. Kit O'Toole.
You guys are never going to let me live that down. No, never. Oh, my gosh. Hello, Tom, and hello, everybody, and happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. Next up, he is the author of many Beatles books, including the Beatles Encyclopedia. He also has the George Martin Bio, Part 1, Maximum Volume, and Part 2, Sound Pictures. He is, I got the new nickname for him, he is the hostess with the mostest, because he did a hell of a job hosting that White Album Symposium last, 10 days ago now at the Mammoth University. And we're talking about the one and only Dr. Kenneth Womack.
Hey, everybody. Happy Thanksgiving.
Hello. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Okay. You're awake, so that's a good thing. It looks like you're...
if I collapse, I'm in a comfy chair, so...
All right. Very good. Very good. And lastly, but not least, he is the co-host of the podcast Things We Said Today, and he is just off the WNHU airwaves, and he's making his way now to the Talk More Talk airwaves. His show... Every Little Thing is every Wednesday night, and we're talking about Ken Michaels. Hello, Ken.
Hey, Tom. Hey, guys. Hey, viewers. Happy Thanksgiving. Happy Plenty of cold turkey for everyone.
Well, for you guys, I don't partake in that stuff anymore, but that's my problem, right? But anyways, what's that?
I think that should be the episode.
There you go.
Well, like I said, we're going to talk about the White Album box set. We're going to take a look at it and see how it compares to other box sets. But first, we're going to talk about the White Album Symposium. We're going to recap it for a few minutes. And Ken, like I was telling you earlier, what a great job that you and your staff did hosting such a wonderful event. And again, thank you. And it was great. So, Kit, what were some of your, highlights for the symposium?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, there were just so many. The panels, I mean, with just the top ranking experts, I mean, and of course, speaking individually, too, I mean, just the greatest hits, Mark Lewisohn, Bruce Spicer, of course, Chris Thomas, which we'll get to in a minute. And I mean, the list just went on and on and on. It was just an all-star panel. Mark Lewisohn's talk, which we'll probably talk about in just a second, was just, phenomenal. The Weaklings concert was really injected a lot of fun into it. And there was just a real... spirit of community there, if I may be a little dramatic. You know, it really, I mean, there really was, and you just met people from, who had all different interests in the Beatles, from art to musicology to literature. I mean, it just went all over the place. And so, you know, we really got an in-depth look at the White Album. I mean, every aspect of it. And I loved it.
Right. You know, obviously, Ken Michaels, it was, you know, it was great meeting all of you, all three of you in person. Finally, Ken, you know, as you can tell, I already went out of order on today's show. So we're going to talk about the news here in a minute. But, you know, you're no stranger to these events, Ken. So how did this how did the 2 days that you were there? How did that go for you this time around?
I thought the whole thing was just amazing. It's so exciting to see so many panels and so many people. Like Kid said, this is a community now. I think, you know, whether you go to this or the Fest for Beatle Fans, you get to see some of the same authors. You see people who host radio shows or podcasts. We are like a community, and we're all kind of getting to know each other now.
Yeah.
And it's fun to see people that I've interviewed before that are authors, but I've never met in person. You get a chance to do that. Same thing with people who host radio programs and podcasts. So it's great to see them all in just a few buildings that are all close to each other. And at the same time, it's a little frustrating because there's so many panels going on, and I'm interested in all of them. You can't possibly be in eight places at the same time. And I kind of wish everything was recorded and put on DVD, because I would have loved to have seen every single panel. And just to give you an example, we did our panel for Talk More Talk on the Sunday, and my colleague from Things We Said Today, Alan Kozin, at the same time did a panel just on Revolution Number 9. And I would have loved to have seen that, you know, but I couldn't do that, obviously. But it was so much fun. All the Mark Lewis and stuff, I can never get enough of whatever he presents. I always learn something new with whatever he does. And he did a presentation I'm sure we're all going to be talking about on the Saturday night, which was a PowerPoint presentation, which ran for, I think it was 3 hours, everybody?
Yeah, well, two and a half.
And it basically is, the way I describe this is, while everybody knows the Beatles recording sessions from Mark Lewis, and he put out a follow-up called The Beatles Complete Chronicle, which not only detailed what they did in the studio, but all their other activities on the same days. You know, if they happen to be recording at EMI and doing a BBC session, and then they're on the set of Help, you know, or A Hard Day's Night, it's covered there, as well as what's going on in their personal lives. This is very much like that, day by day. And from the beginning of the White Album sessions to the end of it, you got to see what they were doing. And you also begin to realize how busy they really were. There was so many other things going on in their lives besides the music, you know, and, you know, like John and Yoko had their own thing working on the Two Virgins album and promoting that. And George came to America, to San Francisco around that time. All these different things going on. Paul working with Mary Hopkin. You had all those different things. And so it gave you a fuller appreciation of, you know, how busy their lives were at that time, that they still managed to record two albums worth of material. So, and that's just one, that was one of the highlights, and, you know, it could have gone on longer for me, but, you know, that's just, you know, just a few things that I would just, mention right there. But, you know, I wish I could have spent time with every single person I wanted to talk to there.
Right.
But there was so much to do, you know, it kept you busy, and, that was part of the fun. And, you know, I hope we get involved with more of them.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this was really a treat. This was my very first, you know, symposium or fest or gathering or, you know, with any Beatles, you know, convention. So I felt really privileged to have experienced this. As you said, Ken, you know, meeting so many people that we've interviewed in the past, and finally getting to, you know, meet them in person. You know, people that I respect and admired their work for years. You know, it was really cool to meet, you know, your co-hosts, Cozen and Darren DeVivo, and obviously, you know, Buskin and Rodriguez, and, you know, the Fab Four guys, and I mean, everybody, and, you know, Ed Chen and the BC, the Beetle Girls, and, you know, and all those authors, just amazing. I had 20 books that I wanted to bring. I only ended up bringing three, but I got them all signed. So that was nice. And everybody was so gracious with their time. I mean, Lewison, what couldn't have been nicer and more. I just really appreciate the time that he gave us. And especially, you know, and Chris Thomas, I mean, the time he gave and, you know, and listening to all of his stories, and Ken Mansfield, you know, I just got his book in the mail the other day. So
yeah, I got that.
Looking forward to reading that. But yeah, it was definitely a dream come true, and I'm thirsty for more. So you know, bring on the Abbey Road Symposium. You know, I'm ready.
Well, so, I want to hear the inside, because unlike some of the other shows that have been reviewing the symposium, we've got an insider here.
Yes, I get the inside scoop. But Ken Womack, you know, like I said, you and your staff, you did a phenomenal job. Thank you very much. You know, talk a little bit about, you know, putting it together and the fact that you probably didn't get any sleep for, you know, weeks on end. And, you know, just, you know, take the time to, can you tell us how, I mean, what it's like putting something like this together?
Well, it's enormous. I mean, it involved a lot of fundraising, as you might imagine. It involved a lot of folks whom I named at the end of the show. Eileen Chapman, who is the director of the Bruce Springsteen Archives and Center for American Music, was integral. In fact, she's still helping me today. We were still working on financial details to close this thing out. Because, you know, this was a pretty expensive event to put on, as you might imagine. Right. You know, you mentioned a lot of the great folks, but there were so many that we left out names like Walter Everett, is one of the great, I think, frankly, in many ways outclasses every speaker we saw. If you didn't get a chance to see Walter, he's incredible. Or Tim Riley, who's a pioneer in writing Beatles books, and our good friend Wally Petrajic, who had to leave early. Wally was there, yes, as we know. you know, and Rob Sheffield did a great job too with his moments. So there were just a lot of folks who pitched in and really made things special. Like my granddaughter, Emma, who you might be here giggling in the back. If you're not careful, you're going to be on the air.
That's right.
She learned how to say the Pledge of Allegiance, so she could contribute.
There you go.
Anyway, it was, now she won't be in the show. Okay. it was a lot of fun, ultimately. You know, folks like my wife really helped out.
She sure did.
Janine worked as hard as anybody on making sure this thing worked so well. The great publicist and our good friend Nicole Michael was pushing this thing hard for months and months and months, and I know helped to get the word out. And also the university, which I'm so proud you guys got to see. It's quite beautiful. Yeah,
it's a beautiful campus.
You know, it's one of the, it makes you not want to go the one extra mile to the beach. you know, it's a lovely place, and I think proved itself as a good venue for these kinds of things. So I hope we do find ways to elevate this kind of activity in the future. Our friend John Kovac, is the director of the Eastman School of Music at the University of Rochester, and he will be the host on the weekend of September 27, 28. I'll get her yet. And 29th for 27, 28, and 29 out in Rochester at the University of Rochester, like I said, the Eastman School of Music. And we already have some interesting people lined up. I'm John Kurlander is signed up. And of course, here's the guy who saved Her Majesty.
That's right.
You know, so that alone will be worth it. And I'm sure maybe we'll do another live show with John out there. He's a really nice man. My
reaction. Exactly.
My dream is to get Ken Ken Townsend to join us.
Yes. Hey there.
Hello, Emma.
Hi, Emma.
Is to get Ken Townsend out to join us. He's Abbey Road is a very important record for him. Because you know, when he became the director of Abbey Road Studios, what he did was rebrand the studio after the album. And I asked him why. I said, what was that about? Was it just because it was so synonymous with the LP? And he said, no. He said, we needed to start making money at the studio. And he said, if you were at Decca or you were at, you know, name any record company, you didn't want to go to the studio called EMI Studios. Abbey Road suddenly, it had cachet from the Beatles, but then it also had this kind of what's the word I'm looking for? It sort of generalized it. It sort of disassociated it from EMI. So I think he would be a good person to have also on our show, but also to sort of tell the story, because so much of the work happens after September 1969.
Gotcha. Cool. Awesome.
And hey, I was just going to say, talking about, you know, people on our show, you know, Chris Thomas was just phenomenal to interview. That was, of course, one of the great highlights for me, too, of that conference. I mean, the stories he had, and he was so gracious with his time and so unassuming. Right. You know, that's what got me. It's just like, you've worked with the Sex Pistols, Elton John, the Beatles, you know, in excess, it goes on and on.
Pete Townsend,
Pete Townsend. And he was just kind of like, uh-huh. like no big deal.
You know, Kit, it's you who's the draw, because he wanted to be with the queen of all Beatles media. He actually had already checked out of his hotel, had breakfast.
Wow.
I believe he was going to go meet, pun intended, for lunch with a drummer he worked with who was in Meatloaf. Meatloaf.
Wow.
Never mind. Okay. But in any event, he came back to the campus for us. So it was really cool. Yeah,
that's nice.
It was, because that's the draw you are.
Yeah, sure. But no, really, I mean, you know, and Ken, thank you again for helping to set that up. And Chris, in case you're listening, watching, thank you so much. That was, I mean, I will never forget that.
Right.
Just to hear these little stories that you never heard before.
That's
like
right.
When David Bowie visited the sessions and Pete Townsend as well. Made it so worthwhile. And anyone who hasn't seen this interview yet, check it out on our Facebook page and on YouTube.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
and,
absolutely.
Yeah, and the audio is also on Podbean, iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, all those places. So yeah,
you're everywhere.
That's right.
All right, so cool. Awesome. Thank you again. So, Mr. Michaels, let's get into some news. So take it away.
Want to hear me play?
let's go down.
Let's not go that far. Let's not go. So I'm sure everybody knows the big news that the Beatles are back on the charts. They have the number 6 album in the country with the White Album. So what a year when you think about it. Paul McCartney debuted at number 1 with Egypt Station. The Beatles debut at number 6. With the White Album. So some great showings there in 2018 for Beatle fans. And also last week it was announced that Ringo will be back on the road next year. It'll be the 30th anniversary of Ringo and the All-Stars.
Wow.
And he'll be touring the U.S. from August 1st through September the 1st. And Hamish Stewart has been added back into the band. Graham Goldman is out. He wasn't there for too long. But, you know, it's nice to see Ringo continuing to do this. And, you know, 30th anniversary. I'd like to see some former All-Stars join him on stage during this tour. It would be a nice touch. But, you know, we'll see what happens there. Also, a concert that took place in New York City on December 5th, 2015, which was to honor John Lennon for the year in which he would have been 75. That concert's going to be released in January. It's called Imagine, John Lennon's 75th Birthday Concert. It starred such people as John Fogerty, Steven Tyler, Peter Frampton, Sheryl Crow, Willie Nelson, Kris Kristofferson, Brandon Flowers, and they're all playing John's music. Kevin Bacon hosted this event, and Yoko Ono showed up at the end to thank everybody. So this release will be coming out on CD, DVD, and LP, and it actually can be pre-ordered now. It's at blackbirdpresents.com. That's the website, blackbirdpresents.com. There'll also be special bundle packages if you're interested, where you can buy hoodies, t-shirts, guitar picks, and pint glasses. Also,
okay.
Hey, listen, you know, there's all kinds of stuff you can get with Egypt Station, and I'm sure with the White Album too. And
sure.
So, also some sad news to report on the passing of actor John Bluthal. Oh, he appeared in the Beatles films A Hard Day's Night, where he was the car thief. If you remember, outside the police station, the guy who was trying to steal the car. He was also in Help. He appeared as the character of Buta. That's Bhuta. He was Polish born, and he was famous also for playing Frank Pickle. That's the name. In the BBC comedy series, The Vicar of Dibley, he was 89. Okay, also, just a reminder that Wildlife and Red Rose Speedway are coming out in box sets on December the 7th with lots of bonus material. And we should also wish a happy birthday to Paul's wife, Nancy, who turned 59 yesterday. Uh-huh. Everyone knew her as Nancy.
Right.
I just said we're not going to do that. So.
Oh, that's it?
That's all.
All right. Well, that's, I mean, we can also add that Paul McCartney released a couple of things on his YouTube channel. He released the Dear Friend home demo.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
You know, that you can listen to. And he also released a Wildlife archive set unboxing that you can watch on YouTube as well. He also has a new line of album cover t-shirts on his face, on his website as well, that are really cool. A lot of retro, a lot of full album shirts, and the album cover right on chest. So it's really nice and reasonably priced at $24.99. So I think I might have to pick up a couple of those too. I'm a sucker for those album cover t-shirts.
Yeah. You're not alone.
I think we should do a live show next September 1st out in LA at the Greek Theater.
Hey,
why not? Maybe talking more talk on the road.
Okay. Hey, I'm there.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. That's not a far drive for me. So
awesome.
I always wondered why all of his tours in the U.S. end there at the Greek Theater.
Hmm.
Well, it will be the place to be next September.
Okay.
All right. Well, that part's a wrap. So as we said, we're going to discuss this Bohemoth White Album set. We're going to talk about a couple of the things today, and then we'll probably finish it off in a couple of weeks. But here it is. I'm sure most of you've got the mega sets, and it's pretty much the same size as the Mark McCartney archive box sets. And I would say my only little disappointment is that it wasn't the same size as the Sergeant Pepper box set. But oh well. Dr. Womack, I would hope by now you had a little rest and a little time to finally enjoy the box set. So what were your talk about the box itself for a second. It's pretty spectacular, do you think?
I do like it. And maybe this is just me being a little OCD perhaps, but I don't like that it's not the same shape, at least the version I have, which doesn't have the LPs, or rather the vinyl. I don't like that it's not the same size as the Pepper.
Right. Same here.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a problem or not, but that's a minor quibble, but if you're obsessive compulsive, it's a major quibble.
Right.
So I was a little kind of bummed that it doesn't have any kind of uniformity, but beyond that, No, I think it's quite lovely. I like the quality of the extras in terms of the physical quality and the texture of the posters and the photos.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's damn impressive.
Right.
You know,
right.
I thought that was really solid. In terms of that aspect, I like that they managed to synchronize things like the acetate labels. That was cool. Right. On the apples, as well as, yeah, there. Thank you very much, Tom, for modeling those. Now modeling them in even a more curious way. That's very nice. Yes, indeed. The packaging is quite lovely and really does add to it. But, you know, when you get down to the music, I've had the thing virtually on nonstop for quite a while now. I think it's beautiful.
Cool. Kit, you've got the box set. As a matter of fact, you had to call the parents to make sure that they got it out of the rain.
But yeah, during Symposium, I texted my parents and I'm like, if it's raining there's a package for me on the front step. And, you know, and it was so funny. They know me too well because my dad texted me back and said, we know what it is. It's in the house. It's fine. So, yes, I did. It had to be pristine. I'll tell you, I'm just knocked out. I think and not to put down the Sgt. Pepper set at all, but I just think this was first class. The book is just beautiful. I mean, the even just the weight of the paper it's used. Right. I mean, it's just absolutely, as I said, first class. The detail that's written about by Kevin Howlett, who, of course, I loved his book on the BBC, Deals of the BBC. Sometimes that's a reference I love. So having him do the commentary, the photos, I mean, some of them I haven't. And it was just, as I said, it's absolutely first class. And I just think they really wanted to give fans value, you know, that it isn't cheap, you know, we know, but I think they really gave us the value with the packaging. And then, of course, which we'll get into more in depth, the content. I mean, I've spent hours going through this, all the extras, I just think they, for once, they really had the fans in mind, you know, the hardcore fans in mind. And if you had told me, you know, because in fact, you know, right around this time in 95, we had the anthology and we got little tastes of some of these things on the anthology CDs. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you told me that back then that we would finally have the whole, you know, the Escher demos and all these things in pristine sound, I mean, you know, not Guilty and so on, I would have laughed at you because, you know, Dr. Ken, you'll probably be talking about this along the way, but I remember George Martin saying, he couldn't believe that, like, people wanted to hear outtakes. I mean, I remember, like, he kept saying in interviews that, you know, he had to be kind of talked, as I recall, he had to be kind of talked into, including some of the outtakes, because he'd be like, why do people want to hear that? You know, well, this set really changes that. I mean, now they are letting us hear it and in stellar quality. So I just think they did a superb job, and I think it's great that they, as I said, you know, this one was for the hardcore fans.
Right. Yeah, you know, and then they did an improvement, or I know it's not the same people that put together the Imagine set, but one thing I do really like is, you know, the kangaroo pouches are here, but they got the discs in sleeves.
Yes.
Rather than in the Imagine set, it was just the disc that was in the kangaroo set, which was for me a little annoying, but, you know, so it's in a sleeve. Mm-hmm. So you don't feel like you're going to scratch the disc every time you put it back in its pouch. Agreed. But yeah, the pages are wonderful. It is a little odd that some of the pages are different. When you look at the lyrics, those pages, the paper is a different paper than where all the pictures and the literature is on. But the fact that, you know, it goes from track to track and you know, talking about, you know, the sessions that those songs were from, the pictures from all the alternate photos from the individual photos that were in the you know, in the album is pretty cool. And it's like you said, I mean, it's a well put together book. But yeah, obviously, you know, I love Unity on my bookshelves. And
I mean, we can see just behind you, you know.
Anyways, but yeah, it's a well done. What number is yours, Kit? I like my number. It's 0027271.
Mine is 0051752.
All right.
Yep.
Not bad.
Lower number.
Yeah. So getting into the music, Ken Michaels, you know, I listened to a little bit of your show tonight. I didn't get to listen to last week's. So, but you've been playing some of the demos and the sessions. Let's jump right into, I mean, what I think is probably the main attraction of this set. I mean, I know a lot of people think the 5.1 is, and we all know who that is, Mr. Kozin. But anyways, Ken, talk about, you know, the Easter demos and the fact that we finally have them, you know, not bootleg style.
Yeah, well, this is the best sound quality that you could have from the master tapes. And it's all that we know of at the moment of the Easter demos. Although on the other show that I do, Things We Said Today, Alan was hinting that, you know, there may be other demos that we don't know about, a few others. But no, really, I love listening to this because, as Giles Martin said, this is like listening to the Beatles unplugged. And right. I was just thinking what you were saying just now, Kit, about how this really catered to the hardcore fan. We have the benefit of having these demos where, you know, imagine if for every single Beatles album from Please Please Me on, you had a full CD of acoustic demos. You know, you don't have that, but this is a luxury here that you really only have with the White Album. So it's nice to have all of these. Plus, as anyone who studied them knows, you've also got a couple songs that ended up on Abbey Road. You've got songs that ended up on the solo releases of the Beatles. It's nice to hear, you know, Not Guilty and Circles from George Harrison. It was done, you know, this far back. Sour Milk Sea, which he gave to Jackie Lomax. I really love the demo for that. It's the only way you can really hear George sing it. On this demo. Yeah. And it's fascinating to hear songs in their infancy. And when you hear songs where the lyrics still need work, they haven't been finished yet, maybe there's a verse that's missing. Back in the USSR has a verse that's missing. Glass Onion isn't finished. Happiness is a Warm Gun, which we've known for a long time, you know, didn't have the first verse in there. It didn't have the chorus. It just had those two fragments of the song with the I Need a Fix part and the yep. Mother Superior part, that kind of thing. Even when there are slight differences in the lyrics, the While My Guitar Gently Weeps demo is actually kind of interesting because you compare that to the acoustic version that was on the anthology all these years that we've all come to love. This version's a little bit faster.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. there's even some other words in there that weren't in, you know, the acoustic demo. And it's just fascinating to know that it started off this way, then they did the other acoustic version, and then it became this other one with Eric Clapton. Mm-hmm. You know, I would love to have seen, like, in between, you know, the yes. evolution, instead yeah. of just jumping yeah. from one to the other. It's the same thing, you know, with Helter Skelter, although we're talking about the outtakes here, to go from, you know, the slow, bluesy version where Paul's kind of feeling his way through it, you know, he's kind of experimenting with it, to the final version, that loud, raucous song, you know, what happened there? That's I'd love to hear, you know, what happened in between, although we have that other outtake of Helter Skelter. But yeah, there's so many treats throughout the Easter demos, and the sound quality is really great. I love hearing, for example, I'm So Tired, where at the very end of the song, John is ad-libbing, and he does the same thing that he eventually did on Happiness is a Warm Gun, right. with, you know, when I hold you in my arms. And then he did this ad lib, and I don't know the exact words. You know, I'm going to end up at the funny farm or something like that. He brings up the funny farm. And then also the end of Dear Prudence is also very interesting because he's telling you a little story there, how it all happened. Yeah. And he mentions Prudence at the end, and she was going to go berserk and things like that. Very interesting that he put that in there in the song. You know, there's a lot of interesting aspects throughout. And it also tells you what songs at that point they had written.
Right.
Although it's very possible, as again, we discussed in my other podcast show, that a song like Good Night was also written by this time, but there was no demo of these 27. We don't know if the other demos that might exist, there might be a demo for that. But so it also gives you an idea, although you can always read through Mark Lewisohn's work, you know, Birthday came later, Savoy Truffle came later, Long, Long, Long came later. You can figure all that out because these songs came first.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part. So it's really fascinating to listen to. And like I said, the quality has never been this good. Apparently, what we heard on bootleg all these years was John's personal collection, and it was in mono, whereas now it's in stereo. So, you know, it's fascinating to hear all this.
Now, I'm going to bring in, before we get to Ken, just a comment from a viewer here who I know. Hi, Annie from Chicago. And her comment is, I almost think the Escher tapes are now too clean. What do you guys think?
You know, that's a fascinating point that a lot of folks have been bringing up. And have been bringing up, including Chris Thomas, talked about this more than once. You know, he was very interesting to hear at the conference because on the one hand, he noted that he doesn't feel comfortable with these kinds of remixes for all sorts of reasons of historicity and intentionality. And, you know, that's fine. You know, Jeff Emmerich felt the same way. But having said that, Chris also noticed and noted how beautiful a song like Dear Prudence is, as Ken just mentioned. It comes out so ethereally. It just blows you away. Mm-hmm. But Chris said the dark side of that is the more exposure you're able to get through these mixes, you also hear the mistakes.
Right.
In ways that you may not have heard before because you're able to widen the mix and the sound palette. And, you know, with Escher, for example, you do hear them differently now because we're all so used to probably the very same source versions we've had since 89 or 91 or whenever that was.
Sure.
That we've all been passing around. We are hearing a different version of those demos.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, there's something to be said about that. You know, I'm an avid Blu-ray collector, and I know there was the movie Predator a few years back got into a little trouble because they almost cleaned it up too much, and a lot of people were complaining that the integrity of the film, including all the grain that was in that film, was all wiped out, you know, so it just had a whole different feel from that. So I would imagine that people are having that same experience with this Escher demos here, is that the integrity of it has been maybe changed a little bit, and it's just makes for a whole different listening experience. So Queen, give us your thoughts of the Escher demos. Oh, wait, go ahead.
Okay, you have just taken us to the place where you've made the Predator Beatles connection. I don't know what to do with that.
just let it be.
Here we go. Oh man. Well, I'll tell you, I see Annie's point that, you know, yeah, they are now pristine. I mean, the sound is absolutely pristine. And you do hear more of the flaws, as Ken was just saying, in their voices. But on the other hand, I mean, how wonderful to have at last, you know, a really you know, just crystal clear version. Because, I mean, I remember, as you guys said, you know, these tapes in the early 90s, you know, you'd get a copy from like a friend of a friend of a friend. And you know, and the quality would just be terrible. But you were just desperate to, you know, anything that you could find. But now, now that is over. But hearing it, you know, in crystal clear sound, I'm just looking at my notes here. I mean, something like Dear Prudence. I just thought it was haunting. You know, this version is haunting. And the other thing that comes through for me in the Escher demos is that John's vocals, and Paul's were too, but particularly John's, they were just on point from, I mean, even from the demo stage. I mean, you know, I thought I was just like with I'm So Tired. You know, Your Blues almost sounds like a Delta Blues kind of version on the Escher demos. But I just think, you know, we hear all the time, and I'm sure we'll get into this a little later, but about the White Album, they were all fighting and John was on heroin and, you know, but he sounds absolutely, you know, like he's focused here. And you know, and as I said, his voice is just, you know, again, we'll never understand why he didn't like his voice. And to hear it this unadorned, in, you know, this clearer mix is just such a treat. I also loved Not Guilty, to hear again, a clean version. I love how angry George sounds in this version. I mean, he just, you can tell as he's, you know, singing the first verses. I mean, just from that point on that, you know, this is more than just about, you know, saying to the others, you know, we shouldn't have left the Maharishi. Mm. And, you know, you could tell there was more going on than that. I mean, it was about him being frustrated with his place in the band. And, you know, I've never noticed that before, except on this demo. I just thought, wow. I mean, he just sounded so angry. And it was great. I mean, I loved hearing that passion.
I have to listen to it that way. But it kind of reminds me, this version, because it's acoustic, comes closer to his solo recording of Not Guilty.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Right.
That's true. Yeah, the acoustically, I absolutely agree with you. It does come closer. But if you listen to his voice, and boy, can you hear it. You know, you can really hear it in depth here. I mean, you could just tell. I mean, this you was know, pointed.
Before we get too far afield, we want to make sure we talk about production, too. And, you know, you brought up a few instances just now, Kit, that I think are pretty germane. Mm-hmm. You know, how viable was George Martin during this production? He was there, and he was doing things. We know, of course, we also know that he was a sourpuss sometimes during the production, in very significant ways at times. It's the moments he's not there, though, that I think leave us wondering about some things. For example, the issue with Back in the USSR is the most glaring thing for me when I listen to these outtakes. It's absolutely amazing some of the discoveries we're making now. For example, the take that is used as the instrumental track is in a different key.
Yeah.
you know, and I've written to all the great writers on this subject. Of course, Mark Lewison first, our good friend Alan Kozin, John Wynn, and several others. And, you know, this was unaccounted for, you know, in most, if not all, of the literature. And indeed, you know, we have that slower version that is the instrumental backing track is in G, and the version on the album is in the key of A.
Yeah.
So I finally said to Chris Thomas, actually while driving him over to our session 2 weeks ago, I said, "What's up with that?" And he goes, "Well," he said, "that didn't happen with me in the room." But he said, "You really, you know," he said, "what you're hearing has to be Verispeed." And he said, "it must have been done, of course, pre-vocal." And I said, "why is that, Chris?" And he said, "because it would have sounded like Mickey Mouse." and he meant literally Mickey Mouse, because Paul would have sounded, you know, like Mickey Mouse a la Alvin, Simon, and Theodore. Right. you know, which actually looms large in the way George Martin first began to think about these kinds of effects. But you know, we learn a lot. We learn about Paul making up the sort of scat bit in Rocky Raccoon that George Martin will later score to that tack piano when he gets involved in that stage of post-production. So there's a lot of fun stuff between the margins that this set evokes. And, you know, going back to your point about George Martin, I think he's a lot like McCartney and some of the others, where he says one thing, but it's probably not necessarily brutal truth. You know, George spent a lot of time. He loved describing things like the wind up piano and how he would do it. He was attracted to the very same thing we are, which is trying to understand how things are made and how they work. And he loved that. And that's what appeals to us. We want to know how they layered on what the Dixieland brass on Martha, My Dear. You know, we're fascinated by that, or how he was able back in 1965 to create such a great layering between the string quartet and Paul McCartney and his acoustic guitar for Yesterday. So they sound like they're in the same room. Right. You know, and when we do hear Abbey Road next year, I hope that we have some of the similar mysteries concluded about several of those songs, too.
Oh, so but, you heard it here first, boys and girls. We're going to have Abbey Road remix next year.
Yeah, okay.
You know, you bring up a great point here, Ken, and that is that, you know, when you think of George Martin and you think about the works that he did with the Beatles that people tend to point to, like Yesterday, Eleanor Rigby, A Day in the Life, Strawberry Fields. So many of the songs on the White Album, people tend to overlook his contribution. And I always like to bring up Good Night, because orchestration on Good Night, nobody ever talks about that. It's not only beautiful, but the Beatles had to meet the deadlines that they had. And so for him to be able to score everything quickly and put it all together, and then from listening to the outtakes, just listening to Honey Pie and the backing of that and how perfect that was for that song. He knew what he was doing with choosing the instruments that were needed, how it was scored. You couldn't have found somebody better, more suitable to score a song like that. And like you just mentioned, Ken, Martha, My Dear, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Or how about Glass Onion, which he rehabs.
Yep.
I mean, he rehabs that song and he puts that amazing string piece on the end of that tune that gives it that perfect ironic ending. And what he does is he actually meets the sort of he's meeting the metaphors and all of the different ideas that John has in the tune. But he's doing it through his scoring. It's quite lovely and amazing. You know, you mentioned the heroin earlier, Kit, and I think it's worth noting that a lot of that doesn't kick in. I said kid in.
I was going to say, what?
It doesn't kick in until later in the year, and really has a darker effect during the Get Back sessions.
True.
And,
yeah.
You know, my favorite track, and this is going to be out there, but bar none on that set, is You're So Square, Baby, I Don't Care.
Yep.
You know, listen to that song and tell me that band was not damn sharp. Mm-hmm. They are killing that as good as anything in those sessions. And you go to the sort of the oldies jams in January 1969, only a few months later.
Yeah.
And they're already ebbing from that high quality. It is staggering.
You're absolutely right.
That thing is electric. The only thing I want more now is I want that thing to be turned into a full 2.5 minute song. It breaks my heart that we only have like 50 seconds.
Exactly.
I hear you on that. You know, as a matter of fact, that was one of the things that I wanted to talk about when we, you know, got to the Blu-ray, was listening to the 5.1 mix. You know, I have a sound bar, so it's not a true 5.1 mix, but it's as close as you're going to get. And although I liked the mix, but I was also playing the mono on the Blu-ray. And I tell you, that's when you hear how tight they were in my opinion, with this mix. It almost kind of feel like it's loose. It's not, it's, you don't get that true tightness that they had at that time. In my opinion, that's just what I hear. But I think it's definitely enjoyable. I don't know if I enjoyed it as much as I liked Sergeant Pepper, just because I think there was just so many different layers on Sergeant Pepper, and then, you know, that 5.1 mix I think kind of added to the thematic, you know, world of Sergeant Pepper. But it was definitely enjoyable. But yeah, I mean, that tightness, like you talk about, when you don't really realize it until you listen to these outtakes and sessions, like kind of like with Happiness is a Warm Gun, I believe it was on six or five, where there it's close. They're like, you know, I think it's like take 44. And I think it almost went to 100 takes, but you really see them working and how tight of a band they were, and then you get that finished product, and you saw, you know, all the blood, sweat, and tears that they put into these songs, and this set I'll definitely be, you know, cherishing these sessions for a long time.
I'm going to bring in a viewer comment here and I'm sorry, Ken and Tom, I'm going to have to block your faces for just a minute. I'm not sure if this shows up like this. It's a long comment, so I'll move this in a second. So, okay, this is from Steve Ludwig, who had a terrific Beatles podcast that's on hiatus right now. He said, from each of your knowledge of the sessions, do you feel they were more negative or positive? Because these recordings almost contradict what I had always heard, that they were mostly contentious. I wonder if they put the happy spin on it, as they might do with the whenever released Let It Be movie.
Right. Yeah. I mean, when you listen to the chatter from all, you know, discs, four, five, and six, just in, you know, beginning takes and after takes. I mean, there's a lot of fondness with each other, a lot of joking around. I think from what I hear, I mean, let's see, disc five, take three of Sexy Sadie, George is singing It's Getting Better All the Time before John does his vocals. It's funny. And then, you know, I Will, when Paul sings I Won't and John says, oh yes, you will. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of great, and that take, you know, the good night, the take 10 that everybody's talking about, you know, you get that camaraderie of, you know, with the three backing vocals of John, George, and Paul. I mean, I say I'm convinced that they were as tight as ever during these sessions. And yeah, there was a few little problems here and there, but as far as I'm concerned, my mind is changed on the White Elm sessions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree. This has really made me rethink the what I had learned all these years. First getting into it, it was always, this was the beginning of the end. They were, you know, working completely separately, and they were fighting all the time, and George Martin was angry all the time. I mean, it was just, you know, that's all. And, you know, with of course Ken's work on George Martin and now this, I mean, you know, we're now getting, I think, a closer, you know, closer picture. Was there some tension? And I'm sure, you know, I mean, I don't think anyone would deny that. I think they're, you know, to say the least, but I don't think they were they were clearly not at each other's throats the way it sounded.
Emma's brought us what we're usually missing at this time.
Oh yeah. What's that? Oh, a cat! Right. Okay, so, yep.
Did you make this?
Oh,
you just made this.
Yes, very nice, Emma. So we do
say
have
hi
a cat.
To everybody.
Hi, everybody. So everybody's saying yeah. Emma.
It's not Buddy, though, is it?
No.
Nope.
Everybody loves Buddy.
There you go. Yeah.
You know, I'm going to be an outlier, and I want to hear what Ken Michael says, but actually, it doesn't change my mind at all. I think historically, it's exactly what I expected. You know, at that Mark Lewisohn and others were on a wonderful staged panel on the Friday night of the conference, and they pointed out, you know, that we don't know what's happening when they're in the booth or when they're not pressing record. We do know about specific arguments that are historically fact. We do know that, that George Martin was on a kind of mini strike at times during these sessions. We know that they're having lots of issues in their own lives and together business-wise outside of the studio. But it does underscore what Ringo said in the anthology, which is when you got us in there and we were working on a great track, we were a great band. And they really, I think that's indisputable.
Yep.
You know, are they having tensions? I have no doubt. I thought, and this is why I'm directing it, I'm sort of handing the baton to my pal, the other Ken, but I really felt that when we were at the listening session, that Giles was going to very great pains to try to convince us that we were hearing something different. What I'm hearing is the music and loving it, but I've always loved the White Album. It isn't convincing me necessarily that things are necessarily getting better in some other kind of way.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I would say to all of this is that you have to listen to what everybody who was involved has to say, and then you get a fuller picture of everything. I mean, on the one hand, let's not forget that Ringo left during the White Album. He quit the band. He was away for almost 2 weeks. Jeff Emmerich left. You know, and like you said, George Martin, you know, was on and off with this album. And Paul has said it was the tense album. He referred to it as that. But at the same time, Ringo later said that he loved making the White Album because they were back to being a band again. And I felt that he probably, during Sgt. Pepper, must have felt he was more of a session player than a member of the band. So for his own reasons, Ringo loved the White Album. But you hear about this breaking up, and I'm sure they had their problems at the time, but based on what Ken Scott has said to me, which is that when he was working on the White Album with them, they were having a blast. I mean, yes, there were arguments, but he's been with so many bands where every band has arguments. It's just part of the territory. You know, you're in a room together, you're working close, you know, and you're working on the same songs over and over, things are bound to happen, you know.
People
and,
walk out. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Chris
Creative
Thomas also.
Real.
Chris Thomas said something at the symposium, which was that whenever they had arguments, it had more to do with Apple than it had to do with the music. Which also made me think about when Paul later said, later on, whenever he would call John up after the Beatles, if they ever had an argument, it was always about business. It was never about the music. It was never about their personal lives. It was always about Apple. It was always, that was a sticking point there. So I think that, you know, that was going on in their lives. They had so much other things going on. Yoko entered the picture then, you know, but the music itself never suffered. And that's the thing. And for all the talk about, well, John was in one studio doing this and Paul was in another studio doing that. Number one, you have to take into account that some of these songs didn't require a full band to begin with.
Right.
And also, as Ken Scott said to me, they were under a deadline. They had time constraints. They had to make a double album by the end of November. Was it no? It was by the end of when did it end?
October.
October. Okay.
Right.
So you have to factor all that in too.
No, so, right. And the same crushing deadline was in place, as I'm sure we'll be talking about next year with the next box set. by then we'll have London Town and Back to the Egg though too.
but I hope so.
Actually, I do too, to be honest. Yeah. I really like the way you put that. And we have to remember the last weekend of his life, John Lennon, of course, was doing lots of interviews for Double Fantasy. And he said, you know, to the probably to the 30,000th time he'd been asked about fighting and the, you know, the intensity of their sessions and everything. He said, yeah, but why does it matter? You have all this great music.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, and the art was always the thing.
Yeah.
Right.
And with that said, Ken, maybe we should wrap this this week's or this edition of Talk More Talk and continue our White Album review at a 2 weeks from now or so, or whenever we can find the time. But so let's get to the plugging away. first, let me plug this show, Talk More Talk, a little bit. You can reach out to us at our email address, talkmoresolotalk@gmail.com. You can follow us at Twitter at TalkMoreTalk1. You can subscribe to our YouTube channel at Talk More Talk and follow our Facebook page, Talk More Talk, and that's where you can like it, and then you can find out when we're going to be live again. And as Kit said earlier, we're on Podbean, iTunes, Spotify, Google Plus, you said as well.
Google Play.
And man, we're really getting out there. So thank you to Kit for making all that happen. And since we thank you, Kit, why don't you start the plugging?
All right, I will plug away. Well, hey, we don't beat around the bush about it. I mean, come on. I am going to have, hopefully by next week, a new Deep Beatles and Deep Soul columns up. And I am also looking for suggestions it is that time of year again. I do my annual Beatles and solo related gift guide for Something Else Reviews. And so if you want to nominate your favorite releases of 2018, it has to have been released in 2018 because otherwise this could be a book. Just either go to my Facebook page, my author page, Kit O'Toole. You can email me or contact me probably through my Facebook page is the easiest way to do it. And submit your nominations for consideration, and that'll be up in probably a couple of weeks.
Cool. Dr. Womack?
Oh, sure. Well, lots of stuff going on. First of all, it's a great sigh of relief that the symposium, and I appreciate your comments and your participation, quite frankly, you guys really
helped. And I'm glad you stayed awake for the whole show.
Yes, exactly. You guys really helped to make it special. Our friend Annie has pointed out the death of Jeff Emmerich, and did that change the direction? It certainly did. Jeff was going to help us to push toward that next conference in Rochester next year. He was going to sort of give us a look at things to come, because, of course, it also ushered in his return. So we really lost out. I imagine he would have been on our show, too. Jeff was just absolutely excited about starting to do more things with colleges and universities. He had big plans, and it's heartbreaking, but we remember him well, and we'll continue to remember him fondly. A lot of his work is behind Tom right now. But in any event, a lot of great things coming up. I'm finishing up a book on Abbey Road for next year.
Nice.
And then also my fourth novel is finally coming out. That has no mention, I don't believe, at all of the Beatles. I have to go back and look, Ken. It actually they usually fall in there somewhere. So, but a lot going on, and I'm going on tour, on a mini tour in February with the Cavern Club Beatles. So that'll be my excitement for the new year.
Cool. Mr. Michaels,
you're... Just a question for Ken. Your book on Abbey Road, is that on the album or the studio?
Yes.
Okay.
Let's keep everybody guessing.
Yep.
Yes. To quote one of your favorite albums, Ken, yes is the answer.
All right. For me, let's see. My syndicated radio show, Every Little Thing, is right now on 38 radio stations. You can see a list of all the radio stations that carry it on my website at kenmichaelsradio.com. But something that's even easier for everyone, if they just want to stream it whenever they want, there's a website, a music website based out of Germany called globaltexanchronicles.com. Click on in the tab Beatles, and you'll see many of my shows there. So you can listen to that show, which is a music show, Beatles, solo, anything Beatle-related with themes. And Tom is very used to hearing my show because I know he's listened to my live broadcast of Every Little Thing. But globaltexanchronicles.com, be sure to check that out. My other podcast show, Things We Said Today, which is on podbean.com, also YouTube and iTunes. That's with Darren DeVivo from New York's WFUV, who's watching tonight. Hi, Darren. And Alan Kozin. You can listen to the show, as I said, on Podbean and iTunes. We just did a show on our review of the White Album. And just like us, it's part one, because we know that you can't cover it all in one show. And also on my website, I just want to say, since you mentioned Ken Mansfield, I just did an interview with him about 2 weeks ago. Great guy. And his new book, The Rooftop, which Tom is showing, The Beatles' Final Concert. We talked about his career with the Beatles. And we did a lot of talking about Apple Records. It wasn't just about The Rooftop. I'm so fascinated by the whole history of Apple and all the many artists that they had there. And Ken had a lot to do with promoting them and working their records. And I could do hours just talking about Apple with Ken. But he was one of the few and privileged that was there on the Apple rooftop. So he talks about that in his book. And yeah, you can find that on my website on interviews, page 4. And don't forget, there's Beatles trivia every single week where you can win one of 9 great prizes, like Kit's book, Songs We Were Singing, Egypt Station, the Imagine 2-CD version of it. I also have an old copy of, there you go,
there you
an
go.
Old copy of New. You got a copy there of New, Tom?
Yes.
No, don't bother. Don't bother.
He's going to hurt himself.
Yeah.
But there's an incredible assortment of prizes that you can win every single week. And thanks to everybody that visits my website. And thanks to everyone that went to the symposium. And especially all those that came to see us or who came to see my other podcast show for Things We Said Today. It means a lot to all of us that you're there, that you're listening, or in this case, watching. And so we're so grateful to all of you for your support of these shows.
Yeah. You know, Ken, I love your thematic sets. As a matter of fact, I have an idea for a future thematic set if you haven't done it yet. And I think it's so good that it could be a trivia question as well. So I'll get with you after this is all over with. But for myself, you know, as I said at the beginning, I co-host a show called Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast with my cousin David Gargolino. We just posted our Liverpool oratorio show with Alan Kozin about 10 days ago. We just recorded our Egypt Station episode finally, so we took a couple months to finally let that digest so we can really talk about it. And also I was fortunate enough to guest host on Ed Chen and Lonnie Pena's show when they was fab. We talked about the White Album Symposium, so and the great time that we had. If you want to reach out to us, you can at twolegspodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on our Facebook page, Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast. And I think that's gonna do it for us, guys, right?
I think so.
All right. So, for Dr. Kit O'Toole, Dr. Kenneth Womack, Dr. Johnny Fever, I'm Dr. Keith, saying have a happy Thanksgiving and don't go where the road don't go. Talk.